Hello and welcome to this IDP podcast. It's part of a series of how development professionals in schools are responding to the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic. Today, I'm delighted to welcome Jo Ballantyne. Jo is Director of Development at the Royal Latin Grammar School. She's not only an award-winning and highly experienced fundraiser in the charity welfare and school sector, but she's also worked in the state sector and achieved great things for the Royal Latin Grammar School. So welcome, Jo. Thank you for joining us today. And I'm just wondering how the Royal Latin Grammar School has responded to the coronavirus pandemic and what's changed.
Gosh, well, they've responded brilliantly and everything has changed. It's probably the quickest summary, but the senior team have done an amazing job. It's such a difficult thing to do for any school to do, to just stop business as usual. So they've done it incredibly well. We are still open for a really small number of children. I've just seen a tweet this morning of them doing PE with Joe Wicks in the library. So it's great to see actually some smiling faces still in school. It's a nice reminder that it is still there. So apart from that, everybody else is working from home. Which obviously is a challenge in itself, but in terms of the way the school have managed communications with parents particularly, they've done it really well. Lots and lots of communication, and I think we sort of took the stance that lots of communication was better than a void, especially right at the beginning. So David, the head teacher, started off doing a daily letter to parents, and now it's, I think, three times a week. And parents have certainly told me, how much they appreciate that level of ongoing contact. And certainly, I'm not aware that lots of schools have done it in quite the same way. But it felt like the right way for us to do it. So
there seems to be a heightened sense of vulnerability for everyone, doesn't there? And I think that, having that reassuring, familiar sort of leader is actually something that we all need right now.
I think so, and actually I think it was in a strange way it was an opportunity for the senior leaders to be seen to be a little bit more human potentially. I think all our communications are pretty authentic anyway, but there was a lot of stripping back, so David's communications actually were quite emotional at times and very inspirational. So I think parents just, as you say, valued sort of seeing that slightly different side, just as another voice at a time when everybody, in the early days, certainly was desperately looking for a voice to trust and feel safe with. So I think we've certainly achieved that. And in terms of what's changed, for us as a development team, a tiny team of three, but a team, there were two really obvious, very early priorities for us. First of all, to work out very quickly in the space of a day or so how we were all going to be able to very quickly work remotely, and each of us work from home, and just make sure we had all the tools that we needed to do that. And particularly for us, the challenge was thinking about, because we work very collaboratively in the development team, how do we keep that going remotely? So lots of Zoom, lots of Google Hangouts and Google Meets, our development WhatsApp group that we have as well, so as well as obviously conversations and email. So we've sort of experimented with lots of different things and have a regular sort of twice weekly team meeting. So we set up for the week on a Monday, and then on a Thursday we check in and see how everyone's getting on with everything. So team welfare as well was absolutely top of the list within that. So in terms of making sure the team was able to work, I think for the three of us it was really important that, I'm pretty practical, and right from the outset we just knew that we wanted to collectively have that sense that this is so unprecedented, all of our health and welfare needs to be top of the list. We need to be putting our energy and health at the top of the list, making sure each other were okay, and really just accepting that. Although our workload remains, which you'll talk about in a minute, I'm sure, and ask me, but it was about really understanding that we can only do what we can do, and that we have to be realistic, and not to place all the really probably the normal day-to-day pressure that we place on ourselves to deliver absolutely everything, you know, perfectly all the time, we've had to let go of a little bit of that. It's not always a bad thing, but certainly from a welfare perspective, the realization that we were all kind of in this together, but also the need for us all to balance our own family commitments and homeschooling and everything else that was going on in our respective households. I think you just had to acknowledge that up front before things potentially got too much for anybody. So, you know, hopefully that's how the team feels, and certainly how I think my colleagues across the rest of the school feel as well. Second priority really for development for us as a team was very instantly wanting to let our community know where we were and where we'd gone and what we were doing. We didn't just want to disappear into a void, and people think that just because schools closed and development stopped and they can't speak to us and, you know, they can't speak to the campaign team. So we've sort of very early on, and as soon as we were at home, we emailed all of our alumni and spoke to as many volunteers and donors as possible, and just said, look, you know, it is, we are all working remotely, you can still contact us just as you normally would, you know, literally 24/7, we always kind of give that message. And I think that was really important, that we sort of, although we didn't really have any answers at that time, and are still working on answers, but at least we wanted to set out our intention and set the expectation with people that we would be contactable and in touch as usual, and that that absolutely wouldn't change. So those were the key sort of early actions for us.
So there's a sort of theme here around sort of considering the human element of communication and reassurance.
Very definitely.
And I'm just wondering, you know, you've been reaching out to your community from a development perspective. What sort of response have you had?
Yeah, I mean, I think everyone, certainly initially, I just think people were sort of feeling quite shocked themselves. And again, you know, if ever there was a time for us as development professionals to be more authentic and be more human, it's absolutely now. And I tend to find that pretty easy to do, but I know lots of people don't. But actually, yeah, that early process of contacting people and really checking in, and still doing that, checking in to see how people are, just as we do with any other sort of key people in our lives. I think, you know, that just feels like the right approach to take, to see how people are. Probably else, we need to know how people are. We need to know what the feeling is out there, you know, how parents are feeling towards the school, how alumni are feeling, and definitely, you know, how our donors are feeling as well. And you know, part of what we're sort of moving into now in terms of our communications is being very upfront and in taking a very supportive stance. So, you know, things like offering different payment terms. So, you know, donors that have kind of ongoing payments or agreements with us, to upfront just put it out there that if you want to have a conversation at all about a payment holiday or a freeze or cancellation or whatever you need to do, that's absolutely fine. We're here, you know, we're on the end of the phone, just pick up the phone and call us. And I think that's really important, actually. I think one of the worst things really is us sort of sitting remotely feeling that people in our community are feeling awkward about having those conversations with us. They absolutely shouldn't. You know, we totally understand. And we'd rather know than things just be sort of uncomfortable for people. And that should still, it's our job to make sure that that is still as positive a part of the process and experience of being a donor as possible. And it doesn't have to be a negative conversation. So yeah, I think just feeling lots of goodwill from people, really, to sort of recognising the difficult position that this places us in, from a development and campaign perspective, certainly.
You mentioned reaching out and having conversations. What have you found to be the most effective way of communicating with your community from a development perspective?
So we are doing, we're doing the things we always do, actually. So all of our existing communication structures are still there and functioning, even though school is closed. So all of our usual newsletters, weekly emails to parents, you know, all of the individual sort of contact we have with people, that's all still there, which is great. And it keeps everybody receiving some of the same key core messages. And that's really, really important, always has been important, but it's definitely important now. Our social media activity and content will absolutely increase. We've had a bit of a lull because of the Easter break, but for us, you know, those always have been really the most sort of responsive way for us to communicate. And I think especially at the moment, people may not necessarily feel they have more time at the moment if they're at home, but certainly our, you know, all of our days are structured very differently. And if, for example, you're used to a, you know, commuting 2 or 3 hours a day, suddenly you have a, you know, window of time that you didn't have before. You may have different things to fill that time with, but I think people are looking in a sense for some additional distraction and connection, and social media for us, you know, ticks all of those boxes, and it's just such a quick way for us to put different stories out of there. And I think our, in terms of our tone, within development anyway, I think within school, part of our function and impact is that we do inject a sort of positive, energetic tone and a slightly different slant on school life. And that feels to us even more like what we should be doing right now. We should be providing sort of almost as a little, you know, glimpse of an antidote to everything that's going on around us. We should be that positive voice that's kind of cutting through some of the other stuff and saying, look what we're achieving, this is amazing, you know, we can't wait to get the children back into school and start, you know, getting back to what we should all be doing. So in terms of alumni, we sort of reinforced our message to them in that sort of very early communication about, you know, we see our role, we want our role to be to support them, to unite them, and to interest them. And they're the sort of three cornerstones really of our, always have been, of our communications with them. But again, those seem particularly important right now. And I think anything we are doing, we're gonna try and do much more visual stuff for alumni, because I think there's something for all of us at the moment about finding safe places. And for 99.9% of our alumni, that sort of nostalgic feeling of looking back at their school, seeing images of school, especially when it's empty like it is at the moment, it's an amazing opportunity for us to show the school in its kind of true glory, the good and the bad, in a way that we can't normally. So we're, you know, sort of thinking about ways we can do that to make alumni really feel that school is managing this situation really well as well, actually. We want alumni to feel proud of what we're doing. We want them to know that we're still open for those children that, whose families really, really need us at the moment. So the more we can do to sort of give alumni that anchor at the moment, I think is, again, just the right thing to do. It feels like the right thing to do. So really, well, I guess we're probably doing what we always want and intend to do in terms of communications, which is to just encourage lots more interactivity. And it's probably as a function of time and our small team, we don't always have time to do it. We don't always have time to get lots of great conversations going on social media. But it is something we want to do now. And in terms of sort of checking in and testing temperature and mood and feeling, we have been considering doing an alumni survey anyway. I think we'll bring that forward and do that now. Feels like a good time to do it, and possibly almost a parental one as well. So partly kind of campaign related, interest related, in terms of what people think they are now interested in or will be interested in on the other side of all of this. Just as a real kind of gauge, get ourselves some useful data, help build our own insight into how we feel things are changing. There seems no better way than actually asking our audiences. So I think we'll spend some time doing that. And I think, you know, definitely much more direct messaging of alumni particularly, and particularly via LinkedIn. Again, you know, the bits that we have done previously have been incredibly effective through direct messaging rather than email or anything else. But again, now is the time for us to absolutely, you know, put more effort and attention into that and get some really direct. You know, the great thing is when we have a much more direct response to things and can shape our communications as we move at the moment, which is just going to be so important.
So despite this challenge, you've actually seized the opportunity and you're putting a lot of time and consideration into your communication and interaction with your community. You mentioned when we spoke earlier that you're actually mid-campaign raising funds for a sports facility. Tactically and operationally, what does this mean for you now and moving forward?
Yeah, big intake of breath and a sigh. Huge impact in terms of what's happening, you know, literally on the ground. This was never ever going to, you know, be a good time for anybody, but it literally couldn't have come at a worse time for us. So we are £2.3 million into our £3 million capital campaign for a new sports facility. The construction team rolled onto site on the 23rd of March and put the spade in the ground, and then rolled off site on the 27th of March. They are back this week though, which is brilliant news. So we have the construction team back on site. So work on our 3G pitch is starting, which is just a fantastic piece of good news that is just a lovely time to be able to share with everybody. But critically, the second half of the construction project for the building that will sit alongside the pitch, the construction team for that project was due to start this summer, but we still have a £650,000 shortfall. So this term was always going to be, you know, we've been working really towards this point for about 12 months in terms of proactively planning what we needed to do precisely now to accelerate our fundraising and engagement. So we had a full calendar of events planned in, loads and loads of prospect engagement events, donor thank you events, and, you know, most heartbreakingly in a way, our student fundraising campaign had just launched. So we had something like 65 students applying to be on our student board, and so every form has been getting their fundraising plan ready and ready to implement, which obviously is difficult, very difficult for them now to do remotely, although we are still working with the board on it. But it was supposed to be a full-on term of lots of student activity in school and a real buzz at student level as well. They've kind of been waiting for their moment to get stuck in. So that's tricky as well. So the challenge really is to extract the elements of our strategy that we can deliver unchanged, and there are some. So, looking at the parts that we can still deliver remotely reasonably easily, and then a deeper piece of work to look at what we can resurrect from the strategy, and really the bits that were most dependent on events and that face-to-face sort of element of fundraising. So we've had to do a very swift overhaul of how things look, not just for this term, but for the whole the rest of the year. The purpose remains the same. So unlike some institutions, we don't really have a choice. We can't stop. We can't just stop fundraising. It's not ideal. None of us would want to be really pushing a fundraising message in this climate. It's an incredibly difficult thing to do. But we have a project to deliver. You know, we are committed. And actually the fact that this is a building that fundamentally has been designed with the sole purpose of improving our young people's physical fitness and mental health and well-being, it just seemed even more important that we nail this one and we absolutely deliver this building as soon as we possibly can.
Now you've taken stock of your strategy and you've taken out the bits that you can actually do maybe differently, what are your priorities going to be moving forwards?
So priorities are twofold, really. One is to consolidate what we have got and really play to our strengths. And I think deepen our engagement with those where the dialogue is still very much open and accessible. So our sort of key funders and prospects, you know, there's a sort of renewed sense of urgency with those conversations now within the context that we're in. And everybody understands, you know, from the biggest funding bodies down to individuals, understand the implication that the climate has made anyone's fundraising journey that much more difficult now. So there's a sort of universal acceptance, I think, of that. So it's partly consolidating that and deepening those conversations quite urgently. And the second bit is around innovation. So in terms of trying to look at the bits of the strategy that we can retain and adapt, so certainly for events, thinking about our engagement plans and solicitation, it's it's how can we innovate and to do that. And I think we are, although we're under immense pressure, we're absolutely in the mindset of being ready to innovate through absolute sheer necessity, as you know, it's usually the case. But I think we're kind of hungry for that. And I think that this space that we have and time at the moment gives everybody permission to think about things a little bit differently. I think we're seeing some very different types of partnerships unfolding out there. And I think it will allow some additional conversations to take place. I think people will be more receptive and maybe, you know, ask less the sort of why should we be doing this, and converting that conversation much more quickly into a, okay, how can we do it, and making things possible. So from an event perspective, there are several things. So just to give you some examples, our lovely gin and jazz event, which we've been planning for ages, the second time we've done it, really anticipated by our supporters. We had to cancel that. That was due to take place at the end of March. But we're looking at converting that into a sort of gin party at home package. So, you know, get your friends and family together via Zoom and have the gin party anyway, play our jazz playlist. We were anyway distilling our own gin as part of our 600th anniversary project. So we have a distillery ready to distill our 1423 gin, although he's now been commissioned to switch over and make hand sanitizer. So we can't even get our gin ready at the moment. So one day our gin will be ready. So, you know, looking at events that we were having and packaging them to kind of send them out remotely instead is definitely one angle we're taking. And in the opposite vein, looking at ways of bringing people together online. So our archive day, which takes place in May and is really such a great opportunity, especially for our older alumni to come along to school, have the school tour and look at the archive. Clearly, we've had to postpone that as well, but we're going to try and use that really for the first time to create that real moment on that day for our alumni globally, where they do feel connected, and use it as a real opportunity for, it's happening organically anyway, but lots of people are digging around in their lofts, sorting out photo albums, finding old school pictures and memories and memorabilia. So we're really using that as a prompt to, on that day, share your school memories. And one of the themes of conversation that we'll build in will be around inspiration and inspirational moments. So who was your most inspirational teacher? What was the moment at school that inspired you to go on to do what you do now? Those sorts of conversations, with the idea that that will then build into a mini social media campaign for the 6 weeks subsequent to that, running up to our Founders Day. And our Founders Day, we are considering making into a pledge day or giving day for alumni on the theme of inspiration. So our alumni regular giving program is called Latin Inspires, and Founders Day has just been a key date within the diary for that anyway. So I think trying to use that as a way, rather than relying on getting face to, you know, being face to face with our alumni in the weeks ahead, see if we can still encourage as many alumni to join Latin Inspires this term as we can, but just do it in a different way. So yeah, I think there are lots of things, and things like crowdfunding. You know, it's always been in the strategy to run probably more than one crowdfunding campaign at some point. I think we'll bring those plans forward. It feels like a good time to do it, test a few things out and see how we get on with that.
So imagine you're coming out the other side of this period of difference and different working. What do you imagine is going to be front of mind in terms of your focus and activities when we come through this very strange way of working?
And that's absolutely critical, isn't it? It's you know, and I think what we've spent a lot of time doing in the last few weeks is already trying to do that piece of reimagining and thinking about how we are all going to be different after this, how we are all going to be behaving and feeling differently, how our social lives are going to be, how school is going to feel, how our families are going to feel. And I think that's really important to try and do that piece of visualization and think about where we want to be, but also how we want to progress from there. And I sort of have a feeling that whatever we do now, whatever we try now in terms of innovation and testing different approaches, I don't think any of them are going to be wasted. I think we will be different. And, you know, a lot of these things that we're finding time to do now, and some of it is stuff that we always wish we had time to do and just haven't, but now we're not being forced to, but are taking the opportunity to do, I don't think we'll stop them. I don't think we will be necessarily going back to how we were before. So I think in terms of, you know, how we want to be, we absolutely want to feel that our whole school community feels we've done the right things in this difficult period. I think hope is really important for everybody at the moment. And I think part of our, you know, our sort of desire to keep fundraising is actually about giving a message of hope, that we hope that people will want to continue supporting us, that people will want to sort of show their respect and appreciation for community and what the school community is trying to do. And I think, you know, we have seen that so many times in recent weeks, haven't we, about everybody is, I think times like this do make everyone more altruistic in every way, not just financially, but we're all just taking that little bit of extra interest and care for the people around us. And those of us that are homeschooling will absolutely come out the other side of this with a renewed respect for education and teaching, and for all the other things that school provides our community and our families with. And I think, you know, parents certainly are sort of identifying all that extra added value that we perhaps don't ordinarily see. But certainly, you know, I think the hope would very definitely be that people come out the other side of this being much more ready to be open about how they want to help, about proactively helping if they can, and potentially about their readiness to give in the future. And I think that, again, in terms of our communications with donors, that's another really clear message, is we don't, you know, we absolutely don't want to push you to give right now, but we'd really like you to be comfortable having a conversation about your intentions. And if you can't give, that's absolutely fine. But if you have been thinking of giving, it actually would be super helpful to know whether that's likely to be in the next 3 months, 6 months, 5 years, you know, whatever it is. And I think that would be immensely helpful for us in development to just feel that people are perhaps a little bit more open to those sorts of conversations moving forward.
Jo, it's been wonderful just to get a sense of your integrity and positivity. And one thing's for sure, it's certainly given me a lot more hope, and I'm looking forward to hearing more about your celebrations when we come through this as well. Thank you so much for talking to us today, and we'd love to know how you get on with some of these new ideas you're trying.
My pleasure. Thank you.